This week we're talking about third-party vendors. You use them, we use them, hell, even Google uses them. We're going to use the example of Genius versus Google and their use of Lyric Find and how that got them in a heap load of trouble. And we're joined by Fred Ma, our graphic designer, and Jeremy Kosh, our general manager. Let's get into it.
It's not great. It's not a good thing because they're taking advantage of all these other businesses that are much smaller than Google, and they depend on clicks to generate their revenue.
Wow, you really hate Google.
I do not hate Google. I love Google, but like,
I don't necessarily agree with a lot of Google's practices when it comes to a lot of these like featured snippets that come up in search. And I do notice that they're starting to less and less link or credit where they get the information from. And I guess they're using third-party vendors now to not accredit some of the sites that they come, because you still get like, you get the one box that has the search lyrics, and then below it you get all the other links from other sites that have it, including Genius. So it's not like they don't come up in the search. It's just the first box that comes up is Google. And then Genius's gripe over it is that they put a little trap inside of their lyrics.
Okay, so like Google, Genius inserted some code into their lyrics, and it was a booby trap in a way.
Yeah, they set up a trap to catch them red-handed, and I think that's what the thing transcribed into. It said red-handed.
Yeah.
And then so Google had to like admit, either expose who their third-party vendor was or admit that they were scraping transcribes from genius.com. So what they did is they admitted that they were using a third-party vendor, and that vendor was Lyric Find. That caused a whole bunch of trouble. Man, I'm sorry, guys. What the, my fucking brain today. That's what happened. I guess we all know.
And also, like the, well, it became this big PR thing.
And yeah, it became this big negative PR thing for Google, and it became a very positive. It made Genius like a martyr. But again, I don't want to like focus too much on that because that's not what the topic of this,
right,
of what this podcast is about. We're not here to shit on Google.
Yeah.
but what we are here to say is talk about the accountability that comes with using a third-party vendor. And so like Google kind of felt that, I want to say for like the first time, at least that I can remember, where I saw someone as big as Google get held to the coals for a mistake that their third-party vendor did. And it's something that happens to us on the regular, which I know Jared can attest to. So it's more so like, should businesses be held accountable for the actions and the errors of the vendors that we use? Because the consumer is going to hold us to the coals. How do we hold a third-party vendor to the coal? And at the end of the day, whose problem really is it?
Is the way that this went down that Google used a third-party vendor, something Lyric, right? Lyric Find, or whatever it might be, labeled it as Lyric Find?
Nope.
No.
Lyric Find, an app or anything owned by Google, or just a third-party vendor?
Just a third-party vendor.
Just a third-party vendor. And they were stealing the lyrics from Genius.
Supposedly, although Genius is convinced that they were.
Because of the trap they set.
Got it. Okay. So us personally, some of the things that we have to deal with, I mean, first and foremost, as an auto dealer, we are absolutely flooded with and unfortunately tied to the aspect of having to use multiple vendors.
And we're probably not the only industry that does that.
No, obviously not. But I would still say for the size of business, we're probably swamped with more than what some other businesses might have to do.
And it's pretty intense. It's everything from like our inventory, from our pricing, to just pushing our listings to syndication sites. There's multiple connectors that go through our business.
That's just it. And I was going to use that terminology too, of connectors. When you think about it, all of our inventory is carried on a system, which is a third-party vendor called the DMS, the dealer management software.
Yeah. Don't give any shout-outs.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
No shout-outs.
Fucking pay us. They're not going to give you a shout-out.
Yeah. We we constantly shop it anyway, so it could change at any time. So the DMS is the dealer management software. That's the first core vendor-driven piece of software used for the dealership, used for accounting, used for payroll, used for inventory, used for building deals, used for closing work orders, et cetera, et cetera. past that, and I'm just going to use the sales chain as the idea to give you on what vendors we use. Past that, we use an inventory management system, and that is called AIM. There's a shout out.
It's fine. I just
right, and that's another third party vendor that takes the information from the DMS and populates it with a bunch of auto descriptions and things of that nature, as well as sale pricing to different specifications that you can make. From AIM, it then pushes to website provider, and in between, there's connectors that we've had to either purchase or lease or rent or whatever. And like exports and imports of all this stuff. That connector then sends it to the website provider. The website provider then builds that into tables that then builds it out onto our website. At the same time, it also gets pushed to other third-party vendors like AutoTrader, like Kijiji.
Stop giving out shout-outs.
Yeah, right. All these other car sites that then present this inventory in a specific way. And keep in mind, so I've just talked about maybe four vendors, and that's just the sales chain alone to get our inventory online and priced and descripted, marketed.
And those break all the time.
Well, okay, so they can break.
They
right?
do break,
and
though.
They
I've lost count how many times all those parts have broken.
Sure, and the reason why is because you're dealing on multiple levels of different permutations of complexity. You're dealing with new vehicle rebates that aren't combinable with certain programs that people want the information and they want it to be accurate, but at the same time, for example, you're buying a truck, you might have a different price if you're paying cash, if you're financing long term, if you're doing a lease, if you're financing short term, if you're putting money down, if you have a trade-in. There's all these variables, and they can change the dynamics of a deal and what kind of money you get off, what kind of interest rate you're paying, et cetera, in a million different ways. And so having all these permutations exist and exist accurately, and oh, by the way, they all change monthly. That's the other fun part, right? Is all this stuff changes all the time. And so to have accurate quoting, accurate numbers, and an appropriately transparent process when it comes to pricing, always be correct all the time, is exceedingly difficult. We strive for it. We go for that. That's what we want. But when you're dealing with, as I just kind of noted, four different vendors and all these communication bridges along the line that can take 24, 48 hours until they update, things happen. I'm going to tell you the latest example, and this just happened, so this is quite relevant. We recently had issues where our MSRPs, which is the manufacturer suggested retail price printed on a window sticker. The reason MSRPs exist is to give a level playing field to all new vehicles in the market so everyone can compare to one to another and have a baseline, right? If you're buying a F-150, a certain spec at one store, its MSRP should be the exact same at another store if it's the exact same truck. We had an issue with the MSRP and the way it was loading. Because of our DMS system, it made a change that then changed the way it got calculated in the inventory. And so as we went through and manually had to correct over 700 pieces of inventory to get the MSRP to show correctly, I just assume, by the way, I don't actually know where this slipped up. This is just my assumption. Along the way, one product, a 2019 Explorer, got priced way wrong. So this Explorer normally
basically giving it away.
Well, this Explorer normally goes for its MSRP is just about $52,000.
And what was it priced for?
$11,000. And it was basically the difference being was the first digit. Because of this MSRP issue that happened with our DMS system, which required manual intervention, which also had manual intervention from the DMS system themselves, that company. In changing it, the one value, the first digit was wrong. So normally it's supposed to be 51,982. Someone made it 11,011,982. And the rest is history. No one noticed. They made all the changes overnight. These things took 24 hours to clock over. Next thing you know, a day later on AutoTrader, Kijiji, our websites, everywhere, we have a 2019 Explorer that's normally $52,000 showing for $11,900 and whatever dollars. So the offshoot of this immediately and the impact on this is kind of humorous, but certainly scary and a little bit frustrating. We had eight leads on this Explorer yesterday. Of the 8 leads, 6 were reasonable. 6 almost kind of laughed, said, this can't be real, but hey, if it is, I'll buy it now, you know, but I understand, like, yeah, this is an error, right? Sort of, that was the lead. That was 6. 2 were much more serious about it. So one basically called it out and said, I understand this is most likely an error, or you guys, or there's something substantially wrong with this Explorer. Either way, I want it. We responded, of course, immediately. And there's an entire process on, you know, changing the Explorer and where it changes, like the pricing and stuff, when you realize this. As soon as we realized, as in first thing in the morning when we realized this Explorer, even before you sent me an email, Matt, to update me on that you've found it, I'm already at that point changing the pricing on every platform that I have immediate access to change pricing on. It doesn't mean, though, that it necessarily takes on every single one. Some of them can be a longer turnaround, as in, like, on Auto Trader, Kijiji, that's a different back end. If I don't have the login for that, as I didn't, now it stays up for another couple hours. I change it in all the back ends everywhere else, but that can take 24 hours, 48 hours for it to fully refresh and flush out. Anyway, the one was much more serious about the offer and called out that if you guys made an error, which I think you did, you still have to honor it. And
how do you feel about that?
Okay. And the last one threatened to sue and threatened to take it to AMVIC, which is the regulatory board for auto dealers. And it was a very simple, curt conversation that, you know,
we've been through this. This is
not our first rodeo with this, as I'm sure with other dealers. We went through great lengths to make sure we put disclosures in place. Just to kind of state that, hey, we believe pricing to be accurate, but before we take any money or do any transactions or do anything with you, even though we have e-commerce and all the rest, we're still going to make sure it's right, because things can happen. So we do cover ourselves that way. But point being, the last gentleman of the day that threatened to sue and all the rest, his point being is, you know, that's, I don't care who made the mistake. I don't care if it's a busted program. I don't care if it's you guys. It's on the internets. It shows for this amount. Legally, you have to sell it to me for that, is his argument. And if you don't, you owe me. Right? And so, you know, there's the example. There's something we're hitting with. Accused of during this Explorer thing of using a tactic that's old in the car business of bait and switch.
This is an error, but this is just right. The MSRP
right,
was on it.
Because still, people will say, oh, you just put that really low. You did this on purpose. You put this extremely low price on Explorer to get the 8 leads, to get 8 people to call in so you can then try to sell them something else. Of course, the counter argument to that is that may hold water if it was something reasonable, but when it's clearly not even in the atmosphere of being close to something, we can't take someone that would buy a $10,000 car and say, hey, no big deal, we made a small mistake here, it's only going to cost you $60,000. Yeah, that doesn't, like, we are intelligent enough to understand
same argument could be made for, like, Google. People have this stigma that Google scrapes their data and use it under their own watermark, and it's the same idea. I feel like it's, like, in terms of, like, what you just said.
You're going to give Google credit?
No, it's just an error. It's not nefarious in nature. And then with Google, we're like, we don't want to scrape anybody's data. So we're going to hire a third-party vendor who will provide us the lyrics to use under one box for the lyric side of it. And that way we don't get accused of scraping people's data and using it for our own purposes. And so, and then they were not doing that. They were trying to do it the right way, but still was hit with that stigma. And that's the same thing when people say, like, oh, yeah, it's a bait and switch. You just priced it for $11,000 so that you can get 8 leads. And that's not the case at all. It's just an error.
Okay, so here, I'm going to hit you with this. Let's throw this out to you guys. Let's say you're the end consumer, and let's say you're buying a Explorer from Kosh Ford. And let's say on one hand, you have this scenario. The pricing is way off, and it's super cheap online. Obviously not correct. That's here. That's one example. Okay, so you have that. I'd like to know who you feel is responsible. Personally, who you guys feel would be responsible in that case if you as a consumer went to the dealership and said, I want to buy this, and they said, there's an error. Number two, though, second scenario, and then let me know on this one. Let's say you buy an Explorer for the right amount, $51,000, whatever it might be. This is a nice Explorer. And you buy it because you read online on the Kosh website that this Explorer could tow up to 7,000 pounds and you have a 6,500 pound trailer sitting in your garage. You then find out a month after buying the Explorer, you look in the owner's manual and it can only tow 3,000 pounds. Who's responsible then?
Well, in the first scenario where, what was the first scenario again? Oh, when I saw the cheaper price and I bought it for that price.
You didn't buy it. You just saw the price for that and you came in and said, I want to buy it for that. And then we looked at you cross-eyed and went, no, you can't buy it for that.
Well, in that first scenario, it's for a consumer who doesn't know very much about third-party vendors or anything about that nature. I'm just going to assume that I can purchase that vehicle as
so who are you going to blame price, when you come
and
in?
I would end up blaming Kosh.
Yeah, so I will add to that. And I would like, so this is anecdotal. Like it's I'm using my own logic, which doesn't apply to everybody. But I've been in that case where I've seen something online, an electronic. I'm like, oh, that's really cheap. I'm going to try and buy it. And it's an error. I'm like, well, I tried. Like, no one's going to give you a house for $10. Do you know what I mean? No one's going to give you a laptop for $30. Like, if someone makes a mistake, you can try and get it for that price. But when you realize that it's obviously an error, you're going to have to accept that. Like it's if it's too good to be true, it probably is. On the other side of that, I say this for Google as well, and I'm going to say it for us as well. We can delegate a task, so we're delegating pricing, inventory, descriptions, all this stuff. We can delegate that to a third party. At the end of the day, we're accountable. So, and it's the same thing for Google. Google can delegate delegate lyrics to Lyric Find and hope that Lyric Find is doing it correctly. But if they're not looking into it and not taking ownership of the accountability, when the pie falls in their face, it's Google that's accountable. So they should care a lot more. They shouldn't just hope for the best that vendor is doing their job. So you look at the $11,000 vehicle, that's me auditing our fucking site. I mean, I'm like, I care about what we're doing, so I'm looking every day to catch errors. And if I catch an error, I'll bring it up. It's at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if a inventory app is being used to push our inventory from one site to another. If we're using another one to do our pricing, another one to do descriptions. If there's an error in it, at the end of the day, it's my responsibility, not them.
Right. So we're presenting it as ourselves as a parent brand and doing it. So there is some accountability there. That's fine. I guess then I got to drive it further and say, but what's the recourse? So in the case of an $11,000 Explorer, there's an error made. It's presented online. Somebody saw it. Does the even though I'm accountable, I'm cautious. Yeah, I made an error. Hey, like that. I'm sorry. I apologize. This is on us. You know, I shouldn't be throwing any of the vendors under the bus because for the consumer, it doesn't matter anyway. But then what's the recourse? Yeah, does that mean I got to sell that Explorer for $11,000?
I think the fallout between the consumer and the consumer and the business. That is like kind of really gray, but then the accountability of the damages done, that's the way I would see it as a business owner. I'd be like, okay, so that sucks. Now I'm going to go after this vendor. I'm also going to fire the person that hired that vendor, and then I'm also going to fire that vendor. So that's how it goes. Like, I mean, like at the end of the day, you can delegate a task. You can delegate part of your business to a vendor, but if it goes wrong because you're not watching it, you're just like set it and forget it. When it goes wrong, you should fire yourself, fire the vendor, because at the end of the day, you're responsible, not them. They're just doing the task for you. You still have to be responsible for the task. You can't delegate that shit. It stays with you. Should probably care a little bit more. And that's what I'd probably say to Google. Should probably fucking care a little bit more. You're Google. Be Google. Give a fuck. Start looking at what your vendors are doing. Doesn't matter if you're paying them to do it.
So what do you do? What do you do with the guy that bought the Explorer? That
that's where it gets gray. That's where you almost like, hey, if you can reason with the person, awesome. If you can,
bought this Explorer to tow 6,500 pounds. I read on your website that it tows 6,500 pounds. It only tows 3.
So the end result of that.
I never asked the question. I never talked to anybody.
I think that one requires an exchange almost. Yeah. That's what I know, it's an expensive product because...
Let's say it's 4 months after purchasing.
Doesn't matter.
Vehicle has 20,000 kilometers on it.
Doesn't matter. You still own the responsibility.
You can't prove that they even own a trailer.
Hmm. Okay. I think there has to be proof of like...
You didn't tell them. No one that works for you told them. The question was never asked. You know, what can this tow? It's just a blurb they read on your website before they purchased the vehicle. They never confirmed. They never asked. And on the website, it does say everywhere, we believe this data to be true. However, always talk to your dealer representative to confirm. See dealer for details. We always have that on there. Now, again, I'm not trying to lead the witness. I'm not trying to say we're not culpable. I'm just trying to open up the conversation to, okay, really, though, is there any kind of shared blame here? Or does anything that presents itself on our website at any given time need to be held as gospel?
No. We're focusing too much on like a specific error. I think the error can be dynamic. It could be a wrong price, a wrong tow hitch. That doesn't matter. The accountability is, we have to own it. But then the damages, those can be shared. If we lose $50,000 because one of our description vendors messed up a description and put an error in there, I'm going to come after that vendor, and then I'm going to fire the internet manager that hired that vendor. We're all going to take this in the face, and the consumer sadly always wins.
Sadly?
Sadly. Is sadly even a word?
I think so.
It is a word.
It is a word. Just checking.
No, it's...
Like, for example, as a graphic designer here, I do use a lot of third-party suppliers for photography and for assets. So one of my responsibilities is just to make sure that those assets...
Are royalty-free. So that we don't get hit with, like, a Getty Images file. It's like, you owe us $2,000 for using that image. We're like, fuck you. Hey, Getty Images, you get a shout out. Fuck you.
So how do you feel if you create something from borrowed royalty-free images, but you create something new, and then that gets stolen by someone else?
Okay, if someone stole my work?
Stole your work that was based off of royalty-free images.
Oh, that'd be bad. We should sue them.
No. Nice. That's plagiarism. That happened. That's why Jared's bringing it up. It's happened anyways. But I would say this. So let's say a friend is a contractor. A friend doesn't work out of our office, which he does. But let's say he doesn't for this example.
A lot of people use freelance designers.
Yeah,
so.
He's a freelance designer. I hire a friend to do design for me. He creates me a bunch of assets, a bunch of ads. We use them online. And then I find out later that that the images that we use in our ads were like basically just stolen from Google Images.
Sure.
Getty Images will not care. You stole your image. We're fining you. Pay us. They'll come after you. So, and it's the same thing if you use it. If you use any Adobe product and it's stolen, Adobe will sue a business if you use their product, if you use a cracked version of their product. So I have to put a lot of trust into a freelance designer that they're doing everything the right way. But if I just accept at face value that they're doing it and then I get hit with some kind of like copyright claim, that's on me. So it's my responsibility to make sure that everything that he's doing is like, I should ask like, hey, just making sure these royalty free, did you build it all from scratch or did you use like a site like Shutterstock? I need to know, I should ask those questions. If I don't ask those questions and I get submitted an ad that has stolen images in it, man, that's, again, I delegated the task, not the responsibility. I'm still the business owner. like, you might not ever use Friend Maw again. Not that he's ever done that.
I have not done that here. Yeah.
Not that Friend's ever done that. But again, I can't delegate the responsibility, just a task.
I'd agree with you. I would agree that from an accountability, culpability standpoint, that the business is responsible. Do you think, though, that there is some responsibility on the end of the customer, the consumer, to confirm pieces of information that are important or mandatory when it comes to making an informed purchase decision?
Especially when it's that important, though.
Things like price, things like towing, things like interest rates, things like payments, things like, you know, any of the above. Does that fall upon a consumer, a customer responsibility to confirm that stuff or no?
I think there's terms to every purchase, and those terms are different for every type of product. So if you're buying like a house, it's a lot different from buying a phone. And if you're buying a car, that's a lot different from buying a house. And so I think that the terms that of when you purchase something, that what you're getting into get higher for the consumer. So yeah, the consumer should be diligent in their purchase, especially when they're buying a car, especially when they're buying a home or a condo. It doesn't really matter. So yeah, there's a little bit of accountability on that end. But I think with what we're talking about, I don't want to put emphasis on the consumer, because the error is between a business and a vendor. So like I said, Friend can send me stolen images in an ad and I can use it, and then I can be hit for a copyright claim. The Getty Images isn't going to care. So I have to like accept the fine, pay it, fire a Friend, and then come after Friend for the damages.
So what if you create ads that say choose your own adventure?
Oh, damn. Yeah, that's happened to me. I'm in good company. It's also happened to Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. So they actually sued them.
I had no idea. So like, again, I had no idea.
I don't understand this story.
This is a true story. So we did a choose your own adventure type ad.
We didn't use that exact terminology.
We didn't even use that exact
choose
your adventure.
Choose your adventure. Not choose your own adventure. Yeah. Choose your adventure.
And it was like an ad that had like a Ford Escape going into like the wilderness, or like a Mustang going on a road trip.
Like choose your adventure.
I really wish we kept the comic book storyboarding that was done for this really simple, cheesy car ad. But anyway, that's another story.
And
anyway, yeah.
So I think it was Penguin Publishing. They came after us. And
wow.
Yeah, they were like,
no,
they
Penguin
were
Publishing's
Cease and desist.
Penguin Publishing's Bojack. Puffin. Is it Puffin?
I think, or it's one of those. Something with a P.
It's one of them.
Yeah, they came after us and they just did a cease and desist. I wanted to frame that because I felt very honored that
Choose Your Own Adventure gave us a cease and desist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And this was like a very low impact car ad.
Yeah.
This was like the budget behind it was like $1,000. It was like a banner that was on Kijiji or some of that stuff.
I think a Kijiji ad roll goes.
Or ad roll maybe. Yeah. And then Choose Your Own Adventure caught wind. Like I don't know if they must crawl for that or.
Yeah, for sure they crawl for it. I think they're just really protective of that copyright.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
Guys, we're kind of at the end of our podcast here. We're actually 4 minutes over.
Wow.
Any last words?
No.
Well, it's important for our business to be accountable and just audit all your work.
But things do happen.
Things do happen, yeah.
Yeah.
It just comes with being in business, like, it comes with the territory. So, there's risks.
Yep.
So,
most definitely.
All right, that's a wrap. We will see you guys next week. I mean, we'll have Brent and Mike Green on the podcast.
That's a wrap.
Hey, just wanted to take a quick break and give a shout out to our parent company, the Kosh Auto Group, and also remind you that we're always looking to recruit new people to join our team. So why would you want to work at Kosh? First off, the benefits. They start after 90 days, which I know is great. I love our benefits. I use them all the time. The next thing I want to mention is our culture. We're pretty laid back. Everyone has a great sense of humor. It's pretty transparent. You can state your mind. You can give your opinions. Even if somebody doesn't really like it, it's still embraced. The next thing I want to mention is opportunity for advancement. There are people here who have started as the lot attendant and have worked their way to ownership of a dealership. And that just shows you how much we invest in our own people. I highly urge you to apply. And if you want to find us, it's pretty easy. Just go to Indeed.com/CMP/KoshFordLincoln and click on jobs to see what jobs we have available. And also follow us on LinkedIn at LinkedIn/TheKoshAutoGroup.